Good evening. Well, somebody asked me on the way in, what's your topic tonight? And I said, my topic is the ride home. And they said, okay, thanks. And I've spent enough time thinking about it, it didn't even dawn on me that that title might be a little confusing. We're talking about the span of distance that you travel between where you are when you're worshiping and meeting with the saints and where you live the rest of the week. That's what we're talking about. What happens over that span of distance and time? How do we spend it? What do we do? When the topic was sent to me, it said thoughts, criticisms, judgments. I think that was it. Yep. Thoughts, criticisms, judgments. Well, here's thoughts. Okay? The last amen is heard. Passing greetings are exchanged. The afternoon plans for watching the game, eating a meal, or taking a nap are finalized and discussed. The phrase, time to go, is heard from many parents to their children, and maybe some wives to their husbands and vice versa. The car doors shut, the engine starts, and the family is alone with their thoughts. Mom, I don't understand why he led those songs. Why do they let him lead songs anyway? They're never pitched right. It's always too low. Dad, I know. Somebody should tell him that he just can't sing. It boggles my mind. Speaking about boggle, what in the world was that lesson even about? Not only was he impossible to follow, I couldn't even figure out the topic. He needs to take a speech class of some kind. Mom, I don't know why you didn't know what he was talking about. I knew what he was talking about when the schedule came out. He talks about the same thing every time he's on to speak. The elders should do something about that. By the way, when are the elders going to do something about the carpet in the auditorium? It looks horrible. Dad, they probably won't do anything. It would be way too expensive. Their time would be better served figuring out a way to shorten services. My stomach always starts making noise. I'm so hungry. Why can't we get out sooner so I can get home and eat? Now, hopefully, that is a foreign piece of fiction to your world. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that oftentimes similar conversations are possibly held more than we would like to admit. Maybe they're not so blatant and obvious. Maybe they're couched in niceties and hidden terms and euphemisms, but unfortunately, that often is the way the ride home can turn out, especially if things haven't gone so well at services that morning for whatever reason. My first thought, and I'm going to ask this question, and I have four things written down, but I'm going to ask this question, and I want you guys to brainstorm a little bit. Tell me what you can think of. What are these parents teaching their children?
Not to respect the church.
Okay, not to respect the church. Is that better, probably? Okay, good. Maybe I wanted the record level a little low. What else?
Show reverence to God.
Reverence to God.
Something that they really don't want to be there.
Okay. It's sort of a glimpse into our priorities.
For a criticizing nation.
Okay. It is easier to criticize, isn't it?
Either.
Okay. They don't sound like they're too active. Maybe active is the wrong term, but I like involved. At least mentally within the service, they're not very involved. Possibly other, you know, just in general too.
It shows a disrespect for the church and for their fellow members.
Okay. For the church and for their fellow members.
It's okay to speak behind people's backs.
Ah, if gossip and speaking behind people's backs is not that bad.
If you didn't say how old the kids was, but if the boys set back they were getting the age where they might be ready to talk, it's a classical cowboy.
Yeah, it's not going to encourage participation in the children, is it? I wonder what they'll say about me.
It doesn't sound like they're looking for good in the lesson. You've got to have an attitude when somebody stands up to speak and talk to you that they have something that they're trying to impart with you and that you can share and find the good in it.
Yeah. A lot of times it takes some effort on our part to listen and glean and understand.
A major lack of love.
Ooh, good. Major lack of love. The things I came up with, it's teaching their children that complaining is okay. And we kind of touched on that a little bit. Complaining is okay. And it's perfectly normal and everybody does it. They're teaching them a lesson in dissatisfaction. And you mentioned components of that as well. Dissatisfaction with the words, dissatisfaction with the service, dissatisfaction with just about everything. It's teaching them or showing them a questioning of leadership. We didn't exactly hit that one on the nose, but it was the idea of disrespecting the church, disrespecting our fellow members. And a lot of that had to do with the leadership, didn't it? Questioning the eldership. And it taught them to focus on the shortcomings of others. And that's very much related to what you were bringing out. Focusing on the shortcomings of others instead of trying to be thankful for the effort they're putting out and the job they're trying to do. Okay, I have another question for you. What negative effects could this have on the children? And some of that was brought out a little bit. They might not be as interested in participating, because who knows what everybody else is talking about when they're on the ride home.
Why even become a Christian?
Yeah. What's the point? What's the point?
When they hear their other children talk about the church they go to and the performances and all that, you know, they may be tempted to check that out.
Sounds a whole lot more fun, doesn't it? Maybe more interesting. Yeah.
My family sounds like it's better than all the rest of the family, and so they're not meeting my expectations.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's a really good point that I hadn't really thought of, but it brings out the idea that our expectations are up here and the church's ability is down here, therefore we're better. Here's the things I thought of. It teaches them a lack of desire to attend. That's what was brought out. That's an excellent point. Why go? If the message isn't worth listening to, if the songs aren't interesting or worth singing, then why am I wasting my hours there? I could be doing something else. It might have an effect on them of creating a lack of interest in spiritual growth. Maybe they are already a Christian, but I don't want to get smart enough that they're asking me to get up there and talk. I don't want to try to figure out how to lead songs because I don't want to be the object of that laser beam. That's not my goal. And the last thing I had was, it teaches them a misunderstanding of God and His plan. What is God all about? And what is this plan of salvation for if all I'm going to do is come to church and hear mediocrity and not understand what's going on and not get anything out of anything? What's the point? Now, the same question or similar question is this. What negative effects could it have on the parents that are doing the complaining?
strong possibility that their heart is not right.
Yeah. And even if there's something within them that's trying to kind of work that direction, it's not helping either one of them, because it's one is encouraging the other to go down instead of to rise up. Good. Excellent. My ideas for this one were the same as with the children. Now think about that. It's encouraging a lack of desire to attend, a lack of interest in spiritual growth, and a misunderstanding of God and His plan. They're not getting it. They're not understanding. We're going to talk about this a little more next week. Next week, I have to think that through. I'm not used to saying that. Next week, my topic is Bible study in the home, within your family, the importance of that. So we'll talk, some of this is going to overlap, because there's definitely crossover within these two topics, which is great. We'll talk more about this next week, but I want to make this statement this week too. Too many parents have decided that it's the church's responsibility to teach their children. Now, don't misunderstand me. The church does have a responsibility there. The church does have an important role, an important part in teaching our children, but it's only a part. It's only a part. If a set of parents, as far as the spiritual growth and education of their children, has the mindset of, well, I'm trying to teach my kids, I take them to church, they've missed it. They don't get it. They don't get it. Their kids didn't learn to read and write and add and subtract by spending an hour or two a week figuring that out. They worked on it almost every day. Almost every day. And yet when it comes to learning the Bible, we think, well, an hour a week is good enough. If you narrow it down to the time they're in a class that's age appropriate for their level of understanding and comprehension, 20 or 30 minutes is enough a week. That just doesn't cut it, does it? It just doesn't work.
Hey, Doug, I was just thinking when it comes to sports, how many hours a week, you know, when they're real young, it may only be two or three practices, you know, an hour or so a week. As they get into high school, it's 5 days a week, you know, 2 hours or so.
Yep, that's right.
We'll spend a lot more time in sports than we would teaching our children about God.
We unfortunately tend to spend a lot more time doing a lot of things. That list could be pretty long if we sat here and started writing them up on the board. I want us to go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And I will let you know, I did notice on your website that you have the audio files of all the lessons that have been given so far, but I haven't listened to any of them, even though I'm dying to. I wanted to wait until after I gave my lessons, because I know there's going to be some verse crossover, and I don't want to feel bad about doing it, so I haven't listened to them yet, but I'm going to in about 3 weeks. Deuteronomy, chapter 6, starting with verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You will write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Passage we're all familiar with. Fortunately for us, God here through Moses doesn't say anything about the car ride home from church, does he? So that's exempt. Well, he couldn't, because there were no rides home from church in a car. But however, do you notice he did say, when you walk by the way? That's how they traveled from point A to point B. He doesn't even limit it. Get this, the audacity. He doesn't even limit it to from synagogue worship home. There's no specific definition of when they're walking by the way. But for most of the people that would have heard this, they walked everywhere. They walked to the market. If their children went to school, they walked to school. If they were going over to a relative's or a friend's house, they walked there. They didn't travel by car. Man, most of them probably just, they had to walk everywhere. So what is God saying? He's saying, no matter what you're doing, you be teaching your children. Doesn't matter where you're at. Doesn't matter what you're doing. You have ability and opportunity to teach. So that ride home becomes a very precious time. Because guess what? As parents, we have complete and utter control over what they're doing and what they're listening to. And that doesn't happen very often in today's society. It doesn't happen very often at all. We have control with what's on the radio. We have control of the talking, the conversation that's going on. We have control of whether they're sitting there playing their video games or listening to their iPods or MP3 players or whatever. We have complete control in that time. So we have to learn to take advantage of it. We need to utilize that somehow. The ride home can be used for a whole lot of things. I've made a fairly short list. It can be used to show them our love for learning the Word and meeting with the saints. It can show them that we are interested in these things and it's exciting to us and it's good for us and what we learned. We can learn to make everything a lesson in God's Word. Is it possible that the song service wasn't all that great this morning? Sure it is. Is it possible the lesson wasn't just all that wonderful and illuminating? Yeah, because guess what? Church is made up of human beings. And we don't do our best sometimes. And sometimes when we're even when we're trying to do our best, something happens and we just fall flat on our face. And sometimes when somebody else is doing their absolute best and everything's going great, something's going on in our life that's making it difficult for us to pay attention and understand and learn. So there's always going to be these issues. But if my interest is in learning something, I'll guarantee you there's something we can learn. Something. It can be a time to discuss Bible stories and put them in the context of real people and real events. Our children, I started growing up in this society, and our children are even more within this society, this societal trend, that so many of the things that my children see and hear and read are based in fiction. They're made up stories, which isn't necessarily a bad thing until they pick up this, and some of the stories seem kind of out there, somewhat like some of the stories they read on their own. And then they hear people talking about how the Bible is just an analogy of life in general. It's not really specific and it's not based on real events. It's just sort of trying to teach us moral lessons. And their brains start hearing this and incorporating this and incorporating with all the fiction that they hear and see and read. And it would be very easy for the Bible to become just another literary work that's interesting to look at and we can learn a few lessons from. So it's a good time to make them real. It can be a time to teach them to be thankful and respectful of others. That was brought out. If your kids very old, if your children have any age or any experience within the church at all, are they going to notice if the song service isn't quite up to par? Are they going to notice if the lesson isn't very interesting or exciting? Yeah, they're going to notice. But what's wrong with helping them understand that, you know, that's only the third lesson that individual's given, and he's doing pretty good, really. So there's all kinds of things we can teach them. Answering questions about God and about worship. I want us to turn to Psalm 78. Psalm 78. Because the first question I ask, and we'll talk about this a little bit more next week as well. This is another overlap spot. Why? Why? Why are we supposed to be so interested in teaching our children all the time? No matter what we're doing, no matter where we're at. Well, let's look at Psalm 78. Let's look at the first five verses. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children, telling to the generations to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. We're going to stop right there for a second. Because we've just learned the why. Okay? Or the what. I'm sorry. We've just learned the what. He's told us several things here. Parables and dark sayings of old. What does that bring to your mind when he talks about opening his mouth and uttering parables and dark sayings? Some of your versions may say riddles instead of dark sayings.
Like the dark sayings, I think of the story of David and Bathsheba. There's not all good in the Bible.
Yeah.
It tells about a lot of bad things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things are enigmatic. There's two or three things going on. It seems like one thing's going on, but there's two or three things going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's passages that could mean two or three different things, depending on how you look at it. Are there things in the Bible that are difficult to understand?
Quite a few.
You think? If there weren't things that were difficult to understand, then why wouldn't some that are older, why would they be here? Because they'd know it. Nothing new. Nothing interesting. Got it down. No problem. There's always something, isn't there? There's always something to learn. And there's some things that are really, really difficult. And there's some things that no matter how hard we try, it seems like we just can't quite get a grasp on exactly what's going on and what the teaching is. You know what's easy as a parent? To not talk about those things. To not bring them up. To wave them off somehow. To wave them off. Now, there are times when perhaps, depending on the ability and the ability to understand their level of cognition, that with the child, that maybe we have to kind of scrape over the surface a little bit. I like to use the very simple example of a child asking, "Why is the sky blue?" Well, if they're 5 or 6, I'm going to say, "Because God made it that way." Because that's how He created it. Isn't that cool that He made it so that in the evening and the morning it changes color for us? It's beautiful. What a great God. But as they get older, maybe I'm going to talk to them about the various wavelengths of light and the density of the atmosphere and how some refract and some interject themselves into the surface of the earth. And so we see the blue rays, but not the orange and the green and all the others. But my 5-year-old can't understand that. So why explain it that way? Well, are there stories in the Bible that are like that too? David and Bathsheba. I'm going to explain that a whole lot different to a grade schooler than I am to a high schooler, aren't I? Because there's really important information in that story for somebody that's a teenager. and there's stuff that they don't need to understand if they're in grade school. And this is what I think he says when he talks about in verse 4, we will not hide them from our children. It's not that I'm going to expect my 5-year-old to understand what a 19 or 20-year-old understands, but I'm not going to shy away from things. My goal is to help them understand, whatever it takes. Look what else he suggests. Telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. You know, that way home, we don't really have time to get into an extended discussion of a difficult Bible passage most of the time, unless you happen to live 40 or 60 minutes from church. But if you just live a few blocks away, 5-10 minutes, you don't have time for an extended discussion. But what could you talk about? Well, you could talk about the strength of God, what He's done. You could talk about the praises and the hopes that you have for the coming week. You could talk about the wonderful works that He did in your family's life last week. There's all kinds of things that we can talk about on the way home. So, what is the short-term goal? Why, in the short term, do we teach them these things? Well, look, starting in verse 6. That the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born. That they may arise and declare them to their children. We're setting a pattern. That they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments. And this is the interesting part to me. And may not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that did not set its heart aright, and whose spirit was not faithful to God. Guess why we're supposed to be so interested in teaching our children? So they don't turn out like us. So they don't make the same mistakes. So they don't have the same doubts and fears. So that they are stronger and more knowledgeable and more capable than I am. Well, what do we want for our children most of the time? We want them to have a better job. We want them to do better financially. We want them to be in a church that's strong. We want them to have things better than us in a lot of different areas. So why not in their ability to serve God? And that makes how and what we teach them puts a completely different spin on it, doesn't it? Because now I'm supposed to look inward and try to figure out what I wish I would have understood or known when I was their age. And then make it a goal that they know and understand that. So perhaps that is the ride home from church. Perhaps that is the ride home. That on that ride home, we have their full and undivided attention, and we can bring something up. Okay, maybe the song service wasn't the best. But what can I help my child understand about that? That I didn't understand when I was their age. Well, maybe that, you know, God never tells us that the music has to be beautiful and perfect. He tells us that we have to pay attention to the message we're talking about and feel it and understand it and communicate it. Some of us probably wish we would have known that when we were a kid. What about the lesson? What if the lesson wasn't all that interesting? Well, it is the speaker's job, if you want to think of it that way, to try to put together a lesson that communicates information and is interesting and is listenable. But that doesn't always happen. So then it becomes my job as the listener to try to gain something, to try to learn something. We often teach our kids, you know, when you're listening to somebody talk, you shouldn't let your mind wander. Well, did you know sometimes that's not true? Some of the most interesting thoughts I've ever had is when I'm listening to somebody present a lesson or teach a class, and they say something, and maybe this is because I'm a guy, I don't know, they say something that mentally is like a shiny thing that grabs my attention. Right? We talk about guys are, ooh, something shiny. And then they're off, right? Right, ladies? That's the way we operate. Okay? Mentally, I have a tendency to sometimes do that when I'm sitting in a lesson or sitting in a class. The speaker says something, or somebody in the group making a comment says something, and my mind goes, ooh, something shiny. And I'm off over here now for a little while. And that's okay. That's all right. Because now I'm following a line of thought that I'm thinking, that I'm learning, that I'm putting together in my own mind, and I'm going to gain from that. Now I'm going to try to help my children understand, you got to come back at some point. You got to come back and join the group again, because you never know when something else might get said and take you off in a different direction in your thoughts.
I've got a notepad and I've written down sermon topics from those thoughts.
Yeah. It's humorous to me, but this happened to me just not too long ago. Okay, I was on the schedule this last Sunday to speak at Beloit. And the week before, one of the brothers got up and gave a really good lesson on the topic of love. It was like 15 minutes long. But man, he hit some really good points. And right at the end of his lesson, he said something that was shiny to my mind. Took me off in another direction. And that became my lesson topic for last Sunday, just like you were saying. Because it was a thought that I'd had before, but I'd never put it together with this. And when I did, ooh, that was interesting. And so I looked that over for the week. Now I remembered his lesson, but it was like a 12 or it was less than 15 minutes lesson, but I got a lot of study time out of that lesson because I had a thought, because my mind found something shiny and I was able to grab onto it. So what's wrong when you're sitting in the car with your kids on the way home? Say, hey, did anybody catch anything interesting from the lesson this morning? I've done that before with my kids, and it's kind of interesting what they come up with. Because sometimes I think they're not paying attention, but they were, at least a little bit. They got something out of it. So if that's our short-term goal, to make sure that they are spiritually more able and apt than I am, what's our long-term goal? And this isn't a trick question. To get them to heaven. That's my goal. I want to get there too, but to me, that's secondary. I want to do everything I need to do to get myself into heaven. But my main focus as a parent is getting my kids there. Interestingly enough, I think it's very difficult for me to get my kids there without doing what's necessary for me to get there. It's sort of like a journey we have to take together. But that becomes my focus. That becomes my long-term goal. I want us to go to 1 Samuel chapter 2. There's a story here. And I want you to think again about that conversation that hopefully was completely fictional to most of us at the beginning of the lesson. that happened in the vehicle on the way home. Because there's a relative truism here. Okay, there's something that I think is true that we have to be very careful of that's related to that conversation. Here in chapter 2 of 1 Samuel, in the previous chapters, we've had Hannah and Samuel is born and all that, and she brings him to Eli. And look in verse 12. Now, the sons of Eli were, what were they like?
Corrupt.
They did not know the Lord. But what job did they have? What were they? They were priests. So, do you think this phrase, they did not know the Lord, means they had no idea who God was or what any of it was? I don't think that's what it meant. They were able to say the words. They read. They participated in the teaching. They participated in what was going on. I think when it says they did not know the Lord, I think it means they didn't get it. They were going through the motions, but they didn't really understand. Verse 13, and the priest's custom with the people was that when the man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. Then he would thrust it into the pan or the kettle or cauldron or pot, and the priest would take for himself all that flesh hook brought up. So they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. They were taking stuff off the sacrifices that was not what they were supposed to take. Now, we could go back. I don't want to take the time to look. Here's a shiny thing for you to check out sometime if you want to. Go back and look at what the priests were supposed to do, because they did get their sustenance from some of these sacrifices, but this wasn't the way it was supposed to happen. This wasn't it. And this isn't even everything that they were doing, is it? Those of us that know the story. They were doing much more horrible things. Is God very happy with these two guys? He's not. We know that. But I want you to notice down in verse 17, therefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. And see, what they were doing was wrong, and it was a sin. But this says, my version anyway, says that the sin was very great before God. He was really, really upset. Why? Because instead of doing what they were supposed to be doing, which was teaching the people to honor and respect and understand God, they were teaching them just the opposite. They were teaching them to dread taking their sacrifice to the temple, to question whether the laws of God were accurate or not, to misunderstand the role of the priesthood. And to not appreciate and respect the leadership in the religious community. That's what they were teaching the people. It's not what they were supposed to be doing. Now, the relative truism to me, as I see it, as I try to take it into my own heart and my own life, is if what I'm doing teaches my children any of those things, if it teaches them to not want to come to worship, if it teaches them to not respect the brethren, if it teaches them to not trust God's rules and laws, if it teaches them to misunderstand the purpose of God's plan, if it teaches them to lack respect towards the leadership in the church, for me personally, I look at myself, if that's what I'm doing, and I say, I'm no better than these two priests. I'm no better. Because I'm taking the next generation, and how did God tell it to us? I'm teaching men to abhor the offering of the Lord, to despise it. And I don't think God's very happy with me if that's the role I take. That way home is critical. That little short period of time is so important. The last amen is heard. Passing greetings are exchanged. The afternoon plans for watching the game, eating a meal, or taking a nap are discussed and finalized. The phrase, time to go, is heard from many parents to their children and maybe some wives or husbands to each other. The car door shut, the engine is started, and the family is alone with their thoughts. Mom, I really appreciated the songs today. The words were something that I really needed to hear. It sure is good to see someone giving their best in praise to God. Dad, I know. I really try to sing my best to help him out. It helps me focus my mind. Speaking about focus, wasn't that a great lesson today? He must have done a lot of studying about that topic. Every time he gives a lesson, he brings up another point that I had not thought of. Mom, I agree. He sure has looked deeply into that. He has grown a lot this last year. I'm glad the elders have been working with him. He is a great asset to the church. By the way, I noticed that the carpet in the auditorium could use a good cleaning. Do you think the elders would mind if we organized a group to move the pews around, rent a couple of steamers, and take care of that? Dad, they would probably appreciate that. It wouldn't cost too much, and if there were enough people, it wouldn't take too long. What do you think about inviting different people over for lunch after services each week? It seems like we just don't spend enough time with everyone. Mom, that is a great idea. I would love to try out some new recipes. And you're right, we should try and spend more time with our brethren. What do you think, kids? Hopefully, that is more like the conversation that we hear on the way home. Compassionate, understanding, teaching, inquiring, spurring to understanding, spurring to knowledge, spurring to love, spurring on to love and good works. Isn't that why we get together? To encourage, to grow, to assist. Don't waste that way home. It's not just a transitional time between one part of your day and another part of your day. It's the perfect opportunity for some things. And those things could be good, or those things could be evil. And we get to choose, because we're in control.
Focusing on children, but some of us are children of God.
Mm-hmm.
But we can have a good influence on each other.
That's right. And that goes back to the point I was trying to make about how a conversation like that affects the very people that are having the conversation. It just piles on to the negativity and the misunderstanding and the lack of respect. You're exactly right. I guess I'm of parenting age, so I was focusing on that. But you're exactly right.
The other thing is, and I appreciate, I really appreciate you ending it to what you did. I was hoping you would do that, go back to the conversation a better way. The world is fighting against the family and against the church. Everybody in the church is being bombarded by all the negativity and everything. It's just an attack on the church. So we come together, not only to worship God, but to build each other up and to edify and strengthen each other. If we don't strengthen each other, where are we going to get the strength from?
Right.
So, it is very important to build each other up.
And that doesn't end when we walk out the door. That doesn't end. And that's why I wrote that intro the way it does. That doesn't end when the car doors close. Well, I appreciate you having me here this evening. I want to take the time at this moment for anyone who is here who has not obeyed the gospel. Our goal as individuals is to get to heaven. An even higher goal is to assist those that aren't on their way there to get on that road. That is a secondary purpose, another purpose. I shouldn't say secondary because that makes it sound like it's less. It's an additional purpose of the church. It's another thing that we should be invested in. So if you have not taken the time to understand what it means to be a Christian, if you know what it is that you need to do, to repent, to confess, to be baptized, and then to walk in His steps, then we encourage you to come forward. If this is the perfect opportunity, we're all here. But it doesn't end when we walk out those doors. Anytime, the invitation is open to you. Right now, if you want to take advantage of that, we invite you to come forward as we stand and as we sing together.